From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman and hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 8, recorded Monday, February 27th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Automated QA, makers of Test Complete, providing automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. Online at www.automatedqa.com. And by peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at www.peterbloom.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks about free .NET developer tools and Visual Studio .NET add-ins.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes, show number 8. Here I am with Scott again. Hi, Scott.
Hello, sir.
And what are we talking about this week?
Well, we're talking about just about everything, but right now I'm thinking about Visual Studio add-ins and things that add value for free.
Okay. Free is good.
I like free. I like things. There's lots of applications that I use where I'm on the fifth or sixth 30-day trial. I want to really know an application kicks butt before I, you know, pay my hard-earned money.
Okay. So what do we got today?
Well, the one tool that I'm excited about, I think I mentioned in a previous, briefly in the continuous integration talk, was the MSB, the Microsoft Build Everett Environment.
Yeah.
This thing is just hot. I mean, right now, Microsoft's really bringing out two new things that are adding a lot of value to Visual Studio 2005. The one that everyone's talking about, of course, is Scott Guthrie's web project add-in that we'll cover in a second. But the one I think is being kind of ignored is these MS Build extras, this MS Build Everett environment. I think they've changed it to MSB, where the E means extras.
Okay.
But it really the Everett environment. And this is a thing that you would go into your projects and add these targets, and you'd be able to build .NET 1.1 code from within Visual Studio 2005.
Oh, that's great.
It's very cool. This would be a really great way to begin moving your development team over to Visual Studio 2005 and 2.0, but you want to continue to help the customers that are using .NET 1.1.
There's also situations if you target 1.1, you'll be able to work on all three versions of the .NET framework, whereas if you just, you know, compile the 2.0, you won't be able to.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we're going to see people continue to extend environments like this. I remember I mentioned on the continuous integration talk a guy named Carlos Guerra, I think, who implemented a target for Mono. So you could basically run MS Build and build Mono from within Visual Studio 2005.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be an unsupported kind of cottage industry spinning up around MS Build. There's a lot of really slick stuff people have been coming up with around MS Build.
Yeah.
Another one is actually a series of MS Build tasks at shrinkster.com/CHR. And these are basically tasks that have been added by the community and put into a, put into got.net. David Yak originally pointed to this, and it's been posted up on Scott Guthrie's site. I mean, just dozens and dozens. I'm looking at this list. Subversion, execute,
wow.
VSS, check-in, zipping files, XSLTs, creating app pools within IIS, sending mail, running, I mean, everything that you'd want.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, very cool stuff. It's a lot like the NANT contrib stuff that we saw, where people who ran the NANT open source XML-based makefile project would add things, and it ended up showing up in the NANT contrib project. But creating those tasks, somehow it was kind of hard. People didn't make as many as I thought. And MS Build, though, apparently these tasks are easier to make, and people have gone absolutely bonkers with them.
Yeah, it looks like it's becoming its own little application platform.
Yeah, it really is. It's a tiny workflow, actually. I had a conversation with I was talking to the Microsoft Build guys, and I commented on how the Windows workflow, XML-based workflow manager, and mm-hmm. the MSB and MS Build XML-based workflows are kind of the same thing. Like, why couldn't MS Build,
yeah,
taking XML angle brackets and turning it into, it's a coding language, right?
Right.
And be integrated somehow with workflow. And they knew that. They said, yeah, we can see how there's this imperative XML-based programming thing that's going on. And then if you look at XAML,
yeah,
XAML's doing the same thing. It's attaching angle bracket elements to intent, to programmer intent. So I think it's kind of ironic.
It's the curse of backward compatibility. That's what it is.
Yeah, you know? I guess it is. But it's also that Microsoft is so big now with, what is it, 30 or 35,000 folks worldwide, that the light bulb gets invented three times in three different places,
right,
by three different teams. And, yeah, you know, and that's why you get MSN Messenger and Windows Messenger.
Whichever one works the best, that's the way.
Six different image editors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So MSB, very cool stuff. Check that out, shrinkster.com/CHP.
Okay.
And then the web project stuff. This is a really interesting thing, not just because of what it does, but because of what it says, is that, one, Microsoft's really willing, I think, now to admit that maybe they didn't realize people were using their product in this way. And when they removed the ability in ASP.NET 2.0 for a site to have a project, an actual CSproj or VBproj,
right,
file that kind of was a manifest, they tossed that and they said, oh no, just point to a directory and that's your web project.
Right.
Maybe that was a mistake. And they're saying that by saying, we're not only going to release this tool, this add-on, a series of new project types that are going to give you all of the behavior you were used to in Visual Studio 2003.
Yeah.
But all the new features in 2005, like refactoring and test development and generics and all that kind of stuff. And we're going to support it. That's pretty rockin' sweet. It's pretty awesome.
So it's sort of an acknowledgement that they sort of said, oops, you know, we want to put this back.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I get it, you guys. You have said on the blogs very clearly we like this, and but they're being very cool about it. They're like, yeah, all right, it's going to be exactly like this. It's going to, yep, make life so much easier. And actually, Chris Sells at SellsBrothers.com just blogged about this recently. He had tried to port SellsBrothers.com, a very high-traffic site, over to ASP.NET 2.0 a while back and basically just got sick of it, gave up, and was sadded. Was sad,
yeah,
excuse me.
Yeah.
Then he ported it last night in a single night using that preview application, and he said it was a treat. He said it just worked.
That's great.
So for people who are thinking about, is it time now to move their 2003 application to 2005, this web application project makes it so much easier, much more comfortable, builds everything right into the bin folder just like you're used to.
And as you said, it's free and it's supported. So there you go.
It's free, and right now it's in beta 2, but when it's finally released, it will be completely supported. I think that's very cool.
No
Make
brainer.
Sure you take a look at the known issues. Of course, there are things that you're doing that might not be kosher.
Okay.
So, but MSB and web project, two things that you just got to plug into Visual Studio 2005. Christian Weyer and the guys over at ThinkTecture have got their contract first application version 0.6 for .NET 2.0 Visual Studio 2005. It's a free download, and this is fantastic. You build your WSDL file yourself, maybe using XML, SPI,
mm-hmm,
and when you bring that into the Visual Studio environment, it's not as rich of an experience as you would get when you do code first.
Hmm.
You go and you write your code and you mark it up with web methods. They are closing the gap on that. Visual Studio likes things code first, right? You make a,
right,
file, you say hello world, and you visit your Azimex page, question mark WSDL, and WSDL gets popped out. They do the opposite of that. They really believe that contract first, the WSDL represents the contract. With their stuff, you can right-click on the WSDL file, and they will generate the proxy stubs, the server-side stub for you, as if you had run WSDL.exe from the command line.
So the idea is you define what you want this thing to do and how you want it to look, and then it generates the code.
Yeah, you know, the analogy I usually give is of the Chinese restaurant. If I were going to open up a Chinese restaurant, I can do it two ways. I could build a kitchen, put a bunch of food in the kitchen, and then I could have someone run around in the kitchen and basically auto-generate my menu by gleaning from looking at my kitchen what I could potentially sell as a Chinese restaurant.
Right.
Or I could build the menu.
Right.
I could decide what I want the public-facing kind of the expression of my company and my Chinese restaurant. Regardless of what's going on in the kitchen, there may be complete chaos going on in the kitchen, right? Band-aids dropped in the food, all sorts of nasty stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't want that expressed. That's representing the contract. You don't typically want people poking around in your kitchen to auto-generate the public face, right? Mm. There's a lot of people who run small businesses that would really rather that folks not see how their business is run.
Big as long businesses as too, yeah.
Yeah, as long as the public face is good. And contract first is a really great way to do that. But their stuff doesn't just run WSDL.exe. It's a complete reimagining of this, of WSDL.exe. It'll do strongly typed collections. It gets rid of all the nasty details of WSDL. And the other really interesting thing is that if you've already got a series of schemas, like describing your messages, your requests, and your responses, they'll even auto-generate some of the WSDL for you. So very, very cool stuff at ThinkTecture.
Strongly typed collections is, even any kind of collections has been a problem with web services. We've always been told to use arrays.
Exactly. And the trick is that as long as it implements ILIST in the correct way, they'll serialize right. And they handle all that for you.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff. Another guy was wondering how I do the cool code markup on my blog. I always like my code to be marked up with the right colors and look nice, syntax highlighting. And this is an old tool, but a good tool. The copy source is HTML at stringster.com/CI1. And this is an add-in that will basically add something to your right-click menu within Visual Studio. And instead of just copying your code to the clipboard, it'll copy, apply a style sheet, send the whole thing as HTML to your clipboard. You can decide margins and font color, font size.
Oh, cool.
And then paste it directly into your blog. And I use this all the time. It doesn't necessarily make pretty XHTML, CSS, wham-a-wham, but it's still pretty sweet.
It's a pretty horrible example on their webpage of colors, isn't it? But I guess it's just to make the point.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. I think the colors on their website are pretty nasty.
Horrible.
But the colors that I pick, kind of the standard colors, are very cool. Don't let the nastiness of their website turn you off.
Yeah, it's just to make the point and drive it home that this can be anything.
Exactly. And this is written by Colin Collar and very cool stuff, totally free. If you're going to be posting source on your blog, have a strategy. No one wants to look at poorly formatted blogs. And, you know, that's actually a larger issue, that whether or not someone reads your blog and stays at your blog may not necessarily be whether your theme is pretty or your HTML for the general blog is pretty, but consistent, clean, crisp formatting of your posts, I think, can tell someone that you're serious about blogging or not.
Right.
Now, you use Reflector, right?
Oh, yeah. Religiously.
Yeah. Reflector is the bomb. Lutz Rotor is a god. I've said it before. I'll say it again. But one of the great things about Reflector, other than the fact that, you know, you just download it and it just works and it updates itself, and it's the first thing I put on almost every machine I've got that's got .NET.
Yeah.
But also that it supports add-ins. It's got a really rich add-in ability, and people have been just writing add-ins all day long. There's a list of add-ins at shrinkster.com/CI2.
Wow, look at that. I had no idea these existed.
Check it out. Look at the Reflector diff. Oftentimes, I'll send a DLL off to QA, and they want to know, well, what's changed? I can see that the dates are different. I can see the version number's different, but I really can't let this go into production unless I'm sure that just this one thing has changed. It'll actually do a diff between two binaries at the IL level.
Oh, that's so cool.
Now, the Reflector file disassembler, imagine what you could do with that along with like MSN search, the local desktop search, or Google desktop search. You could decompile the entire .NET framework into a folder, and then use the text search tools to poke around in the quote-unquote source code for the .NET framework, searching it rather than using Reflector.
Wow.
Very hot. The code metric stuff is also nice. Not as nice as the DX Core stuff from CodeRush, but still pretty sweet. The tree map is bizarre. It's a visual tree map, like those ones that show you how much space your files in your hard drive are using.
ComViewer looks cool, too.
Yeah. And then Reflector Graph. Fantastic for explaining to your boss how complicated or not complicated your dependency tree of all your different objects are.
Very cool.
Yeah, very impressive stuff. There's also ones that will spit out, you know, spit out different languages. You know how Reflector will let you say, well, show me this as VB?
Sure.
They've got ones that'll spit out managed C++ or Delphi. Maybe Mark Miller would like that. Or Iron Python. There's also one for a language called Boo, which is a very cool new .NET language that's kind of impressing people. So take a look at Open Running Assembly. This one's fantastic. You can actually open up an assembly from a running process. So you don't want to say, wait a second, what's in that process, right? Wow. You ever like see a rogue process running and you want to say, I know there's some .NET in there. I want to see what they're doing.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it'll rip that open for you. Very cool stuff. Now, if you look at Open Running Assembly and you also use the Process Explorer tool from SysInternals, this is the replacement for Task Manager.
I didn't know about that. Where is that?
Oh, my goodness. Sys Internals, SYS Internals. This is Mark Rusinovich. These guys are, they're just gods. They're just amazing people. These are the kind of people where, you know how other people would meet like Tom Cruise or Jamie Foxx or see them on the street and stop them? I would actually stop Rusinovich on the street and say, dude, I love your work.
I use FileMon by Sys Internals, but so these are the same guys, obviously.
Exactly. So take a look at Process Explorer. They're on version 10.06. They just released a new version. This is a replacement for Task Manager. And I'll use an old analogy, but the difference between Process Explorer and Task Manager is the difference between shooting a bullet and throwing it. Process Explorer is that much better. Separate CPU history graphs per process. Syntax highlighting within a process to tell you whether or not it's running .NET. If you've ever wanted to search for a DLL across all running processes to see if your DLL is in the memory of other processes.
Wow. I've shrinksterized it at shrinkster.com/CID. That'll take you to Process Explorer. Yeah.
Everything they do is stunning. Particularly, Process Explorer is a standout. Also, Auto Runs, fantastic tool. Auto Runs tells you every single thing that starts up automatically when your system boots. And then one that I put on every single machine, especially machines where I can't afford to buy a disk defragmenter like Disk Keeper, is one called Page Defrag, Page D-F-R-G. This is a paging tool defragger that will run in that kind of weird text mode space right before Windows starts up.
Yeah.
And it will defrag your paging file.
Wow.
The kind of stuff that you can't defrag unless you either buy a full-on defragger tool. I put that on my wife's machine. It also defragments your registry.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
Scott, I want to take a minute here to remind the listeners that Hansel Minutes would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsors. And one of those sponsors is Automated QA. They make a great product called Test Complete, which is a testing tool that covers Windows apps, web apps, .NET Framework apps, and Java apps. It's a complete solution, and we'd really like everybody right now to go to automatedqa.com, check out Test Complete, and tell them thanks for supporting Hansel Minutes. I'm sold. I'm going to spend all night here tonight.
Yeah. Put all that stuff
tools.
In your path. It's absolutely brilliant. Some of the things that people don't realize about their stuff, and there's a couple of articles buried on their site, is that they want their applications to work anywhere, anytime, on any kind of machine without having to do a lot of installations. Turns out that some of those applications, like Regmon and FileMon, actually unpack themselves when you run them. Like they have drivers and things inside. Mm. They'll notice what kind of what version of Windows you're on, unpack their driver, load it up into memory on the fly, run, and then undo it when you close them.
Wow.
It's amazing. The guys are brilliant. This is the guy, of course, that found out the whole Sony rootkit.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Huh. Fantastic stuff.
Great. Let's move on.
Okay. Let's talk about having multiple versions of .NET on a single machine. A lot of people complain because XP Pro doesn't let you have multiple websites. You can have multiple vdirs, but you can't have, you know, under IIS administration, you can't have two instances of IIS, each listening on a different port. And I get lots of questions like, well, there's different hacks that you can do and you can poke around in the registry and force XP Pro to do that. But there will always be a governor on the, you know, throttling on XP Pro's IIS. And that's just life. It's meant not to run a website. And even though I've heard people running, you know, public websites on XP Pro, it's meant for development. So when they ask me, like, don't you hate that? Don't you have a problem with not being able to run multiple websites? I just run my stuff under a virtual directory. And I try to write it in such a way that if I ever moved it out of the virtual directory and up to the root, that the paths that it generates internally would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed last week kind of as a reminder that you can have, of course, multiple versions of .NET running underneath ASP.NET.
Right.
And you can use a tool that ASP.NET 2.0 installs. If you right-click on the properties of your particular website under IIS, there's an ASP.NET tab there that lets you pick what version of ASP.NET.
And that's for every site.
On that particular site. And interestingly, you'll get multiple ASP.NET worker processes up. And you can use tools like Process Explorer, like we just talked about, to tell which version of .NET is running under which.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you look in the you look in Task Manager and you can't really tell.
Right. Just gives you the ASP.NET worker process.
Now, you can use ASP.NET Reg IIS at the command line in order to install different versions of ASP.NET on a particular vdir, but using that visual tool is a lot easier. Now, I got myself in trouble a couple of days ago when I made a copy of a website and just went in and said, make it ASP.NET enabled, and it defaulted to ASP.NET 2.0. And but the only symptom I got was that I couldn't debug. I would go debug processes from within Visual Studio. I'd pick ASP.NET worker process and it would say unable to start debugging. And it was just pissing me off. And then I realized when I hit debug processes, it was showing me the path to which version of ASP.NET worker process was. There's two versions, right? One for each version of .NET. And if I just looked at that text box where it showed me the path, I would have noticed that I was trying from within Visual Studio 2003 to debug a 2005 ASP.NET.
Dope.
Yep, right there in your face, right? Took me an hour to figure that out.
That happens.
It will never happen again. Now, helping people debug problems like this, I always seem to end up getting involved in that. I'm sure you do too, right? I mean, I'm the IT manager for my whole family.
Your family, yeah, right.
Yeah, my mom, my wife, you know. I mean, if Hanselman.com is down, you know, I've got cousins that are going to call me and find out what the heck's going on.
Right.
So, a couple of my, you know, I usually use the Ask for Remote Assistance feature of Windows Messenger.
Yeah.
You know, chat them and then they can I can remote desktop into their machines.
Unless but that only works. Their firewall on.
Yeah. And that only works on XP Pro, right?
Right.
So I started using a tool called Copilot.
Right. We talked about that on an earlier show.
Yeah, I did. And Abdu Bukris emailed me back and said, well, Copilot's great, but it costs. And cheap fellow that I am, Abdu pointed me at teamviewer.com, which appears to be basically the same thing. No install required, and it's 500K freeware.
Huh.
Lets you do desktop sharing, remote control, has some usage limits. I think you're allowed to do it for a half an hour before you have to maybe think about paying them for licensing. But works just like VNC. It works behind firewalls. They have a router, basically, that will handle the finding a path to your remote system. It's free software. It's licensed under GPL. Yeah, it's a very pretty website and works on any version of Windows, including 2000. And I think it's the kind of thing I might try on some of my my family's web computers that are either behind a firewall where I can't get the remote desktop stuff to work.
Yeah.
When I might ordinarily have had to pay $10 to Copilot. So very cool stuff. Thank you, Abdu, for that that link. That's at trinkster.com/CI7.
I'm going to have to take that for a spin.
Yeah, definitely. I'm ready to go fix something now. I tell you, not that I don't want to visit my relatives, but any opportunity to fix something remotely is a great way to get things off of your to-do list.
Save some time.
Yeah. And actually, speaking of lists, I was checking this out. Listable, list, I-B-L-E, not A-B-L-E, .com, shrinkster.com/CI9. It's kind of like Delicious, like a social bookmarker. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like dig.com, but it's basically a list manager. Like, you know how I've got my ultimate tools list, except I maintain it.
Yes.
So it's kind of up to me and up to the people to wait for me to fix links. They can say, well, I like this or I don't like that, but they don't get to really collaborate on a list. Listable is kind of like Delicious, except things are marked up as lists, and then people can add to the list all they want. And basically vote resources as the most or least useful resource in that list.
Oh my God, this is valuable.
It is amazing. Right there on the top today, at least, there's a Windows open source or freeware with 150 different things that are all free.
I like the top RSS feed submission sites. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, yeah. Top, you know, and then they have silly ones that aren't necessarily as interesting, like top movies of all time, and they're all voting on these things. And sometimes it's nonsense. Right now, Buckaroo Banzai is the number one movie. I don't
Best
know what.
Best Grease Monkey scripts. What's that?
Okay, so Grease Monkey is an
An extension. I thought they were talking about a TV show or something.
No, like scripts for a show called Grease Monkey?
Got it. Yeah, yeah.
No, that wouldn't be a show I would want to be watching.
Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. But very interesting stuff. Top anonymizer sites. Sites for letting you browse anonymously. Of course, Tor being the top, tor.eff.org. There's also some other less interesting ones like hidemyass.com, which is a valuable thing if you're searching for naughty bits at the hotel.
I suppose.
Yeah, not really, not something I'm interested in, but interesting interesting stuff that you'll find up there. This
it'd
is the thing
lot,
when you...
It'd take a lot more than that to hide my ass, but anyway. Oh,
hello. No, when you find these kind of social bookmarking sites, sometimes interesting stuff rises to the top if it truly is interesting. And that's one of the benefits of the mob mentality. You know, the mob can do stupid stuff.
Right.
And you know, we've seen some of those things on Slashdot. But for the most part, mobs that are interested in the same topic can make some interesting things. Listable is a good place to find links of interesting stuff. You know, dig.com, D-I-G-G.com is cool.
Right.
And there's an interesting dig clone specific for .NET people called .NETKicks.com. Shrinkster.com/CI5. This is a pretty interesting one. It's literally a complete clone of dig written in .NET and, has all the kind of stuff that I think people who listen to this show and people who listen to .NET Rock should be really interested in.
Yeah.
Right now on .NETKicks.com, there's an article on how to use MySQL, the open source database tool with .NET, locking the door behind you. Very interesting stuff. Some of these things people have seen before because they get submitted and then folks say, oh, that's great, that's neat, and they start moving it up the list. But staying on the homepage, you're definitely going to find some interesting stuff up there.
So we were talking about add-ins here. We should mention DX Core.
Totally. Yeah, but folks know that I'm a Code Rush fan, Code Rush made by the Dev Express guys. And sometimes they say, oh, well, Code Rush costs too much money. I don't want to spend the money. Personally, I think if you're serious about development and you find a tool, whether it be Code Rush or any tool that makes your life easier, you know, it's up to you to give the developers of that tool money out of respect for their hard work. But the Code Rush folks have actually made their engine, DX Core, shrinkster.com/CIA, available to folks to write their own plugins.
Right.
And I think one of the most prolific developers of these plugins, at least the ones that I use, is Travis Illig, who actually works at my company. And he's got a really great plugin called CR Documenter at shrinkster.com/CI8. This has been seen by lots of people. This is a really neat tool if you ever use like NDoc to auto-generate your documentation for your .NET assemblies.
Right.
He'll show a preview window, a toolbox that integrates entirely with Visual Studio, any version of Visual Studio, and it will pop up using the DX Core engine and sit there and show you a preview of what your comments will look like if they were generated through NDoc. This allows you to create a lot of really rich MSDN-style content within VisualStudio.net without having to do the entire build and do the entire NDoc process.
I would also like to add a plug for DNR TV, which is one of the other shows that we produce. This is a Camtasia show, and Mark Miller was on it, and we spent over an hour writing a DX Core plugin on the fly from scratch right before your eyes, and you can watch that at shrinkster.com/CIE. So what else are we going to talk about today?
Well, a couple of random links of interesting things that I think that folks would dig. No pun intended to dig. First one is hiddenpassageway.com. This is pretty interesting. shrinkster.com/CI6. This is a company that will put a Batman-style hidden passageway into your house for you. And they're serious.
What?
We're talking about like pulling back a book and having a bookshelf open up.
Wow.
Or you know, moving a candlestick. They're called creative home engineering. So they'll make a fireplace fold back into a panic room.
Wow.
It's crazy.
That is crazy.
If you like things like, you know, like the like Make magazine or the Make blog, these do it yourself or DIY sites.
Yeah.
They'll sell you a do it yourself kit where you can kind of enable your house for secret passageways and features. Very cool stuff.
Very cool.
I don't think the wife's going to go for it. We live in a pretty small random suburb, you know, where all the houses are exactly the same. I think someone would notice if I don't know, slipped into a bat cave in my basement.
Big yeah. slide.
So another weird thing is I'm always looking for puzzles and stuff to show to the wife and waste a little bit of time at home. And this one is they call it Magic Cube 4D, but basically it's a four-dimensional Rubik's Cube. It's not really four-dimensional, but it's kind of an analog. It takes a Rubik's Cube and then floats six other Rubik's Cubes themselves around the outside of the Rubik's Cube. You really have to see it. The thing that's interesting about it is that according to their math, and I only got so far in math, but apparently the number of positions that are potential on this particular Rubik's Cube are greater than the total number of atoms in the universe.
Wow.
So they show you the math, and it goes from like the regular Rubik's Cube, I think, has got something like 43 gazillion unique positions. It looks like basically 43 million billion positions. That's the 3D regular Rubik's Cube.
Wow.
While the 4D cube has even more. Apparently, though, even though it has more permutations, it's not that hard to solve if you're already a master of the 3D Rubik's Cube. So I am not, in fact, a master. My technique for taking apart the Rubik's Cube is taking apart the Rubik's Cube, putting it back together again.
All right. What's next?
So, yeah. So, let me see. Paint.net. You use that, right?
I have, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Okay, it's out. The 2.6 version's out of beta. They've moved over to .NET 2.0.
What are they adding now? I mean, you know, it started out as just a bare-bones paint app, and I can see it going all the way to Photoshop.
Yeah, it's there. It's got layers. It's got unlimited history. It's got more and more special effects.
Wow.
Totally open source. What's new in the 2.6 version? Color curves, new blending modes, zooming with the mouse wheel. They can be deployed now with Active Directory, so you could build this into your corporate deployment. It's using .NET 2.0. It's wicked fast.
Sweet.
Internationalization support, GIF transparency. I mean, it's just why this is not built into Vista, I just absolutely do not know.
Yeah,
I know
really?
They hired the kid, though.
They did?
The kid who they hired the kid who made the thing. So, I mean, that's really the way to get hired now by Microsoft, right?
Yeah,
either
I guess so.
Run an open source project or write an incredibly awesome program that makes Windows look really awesome.
Or both.
Or both, like this guy did.
Yeah.
Boom, instant job. Now, did you have a... Hey, now here's a total jagged segue. Did you have a Newton?
No, I never got into the Newton.
No? What was your first palm-sized object?
Believe it or not, it was an iPack.
Ew.
Yeah.
Eh. I was all about the Newton.
Yeah.
Just freaking loved it. And now there's this Project Origami. Have you seen the marketing for this?
No, I haven't seen it at all. Let's see it.
I think there's a projectorigami.com. Let me check that. And this is basically the first time that I've seen Microsoft not tell people about something like years beforehand. And it's freaking people out. It's a small hand. Actually, it's not projectorigami.com. It appears to be a small handheld, not quite a tablet, kind of possibly a. It looks like Microsoft's Newton, basically.
I'm watching the video here at shrinkster.com/CHO. Don't really understand what's going on in it yet.
Scoble, here at origamiproject.com is this mysterious Flash application that has like. All of these self-referential thing, you know, who am I, what am I, how will I make your life easier? And in that video that you just described at shrinkster.com/CHO, you see kind of like happy, attractive people going about their life, except they've got this small, not quite tablet PC in their hands and they're drawing on it. They keep taking notes. It's the remote control for their media center. They're
right.
Checking their email. You know, it's like, It's a small object with screens and a battery and a tablet that's much, much smaller than a tablet PC. It looks kind of like the OQO. Do you remember that?
Yeah, sure.
It looks kind of like an OQO, except the OQO was just trying to be a laptop for people with incredibly small hands.
What? You know, I don't know. Microsoft is in the software business. Are they manufacturing this as hardware?
No, because if you poke around on Google searching for Project Origami, there appear to be already a number of hardware vendors lined up to make this stuff. So I it feels to me like tiny Windows XP with a different shell.
Yeah.
So I mean, maybe this is another way to get the tablet out there. I'm not sure, but it also seems to have Media Center aspects to it. In the video, about halfway through, the girl uses it as a remote control.
Right.
Not sure, but where do I pay?
I don't know.
I'm ready, dude. Let's go.
So it's still a clandestine project, and
apparently
it's been
until March on March 2nd, it will be less clandestine.
Okay.
But I usually would just watch Engadget for all the details.
Right. Okay.
But, yeah, it's bizarre. Check it out.
Cool. Well, Scott, before we wrap it up, you're going to be talking somewhere in Canada?
Yeah, I'm doing a poor man's roadshow. I'll be in Vancouver, BC on March 6th, next Monday, and I'll be in Victoria on March 7th, and I'm going to be talking about DOSBlog, and we're going to take it apart and see if there's any useful code within DOSBlog that people can use in their own projects. It's going to be kind of anatomy of a blogging engine.
Sounds great. So if you happen to be in Vancouver next week, come up and see Scott. All right. Well, that's the show, Scott. Thanks a lot for talking to us. And for the listeners, we'll talk to you next week on Hansel Minutes.